Hey everybody, Mike Lawson here with CU Broadcast. On the show today, we have NASCU's Lucy Ito talking about the latest outlook on state credit union system, RBC2, and marijuana business making issues. So check it out. And you have been on the job, so to speak, for a year now. And what's your perspective of being on the job for a year? What's your take on what's going on right now?
You know, the rewarding thing for me has been to confirm that state regulators really believe that they come up with the best regulatory and supervisory solutions when they actively consult with credit unions. Very refreshing to see that over and over again from state to state, that they really value that interaction with credit unions in order to come up with safety and soundness supervisory solutions.
Indeed. So you're finding things are kind of easy to work as far as, you know, organizations working together, that type of thing?
Yeah, it has been very easy, and it's great to see both regulators and credit unions craving that time with each other to consult. I've also been struck at how state regulators, of course, their principal concern is safety and soundness, but also they are equally concerned about things going on locally in their state. So how vibrant is their economy? What is the environment like for small businesses? So that has actually been enlightening for me to see that concern, balancing what's going on in the economy and with businesses, along with safety and soundness concerns. The other thing that's been surprising is, you know, I came from credit union land, and I did not appreciate till I got to NASCUS how much state regulators who supervise both credit unions and banks, how much they understand, because they have the perspective of not just credit unions, but banks as well. So they understand the relative risk of credit unions in the broader marketplace.
Yeah, because I mean, when we all hear the term regulation or compliance, there's all these negative connotations that go along with it, especially, you know, with it taking up so much time and stuff. But it's refreshing to hear your perspective on seeing how the two sides, so to speak, are working together and are well versed in each other's issues and how business works and stuff. So it's great to hear that side of it, because that's a story that's rarely told, if ever. So thank you for that. So, I mean, let's get to the next question here. Let's dive a little bit deeper here, Lucy. What's the latest outlook for state credit union system? What have you seen here?
Well, so I am always watching what's going on in terms of federal and state charters and converting from one charter to the other. In 2014, 11 federal charters converted to state charter.
Interesting.
In that same time period, three state charters converted to federal charters. We got the year of 2014, where it's 11 conversions to state and three to federal. In 2015 so far, two federal credit unions have converted to state, and no credit unions yet through August have gone from state to federal. To me, what that shows is it's not a contest between federal and state charters, but it is a symptom. Credit unions must be converting to another charter, you know, for good reasons.
Right
now, for the most part, when a credit union switches from federal to state, in most cases, it's because of field of membership. They find themselves constrained by the federal charter, and you have credit unions converting to a federal charter from state. It's often due to interstate branching reasons. I'm pleased because these two examples of why credit unions choose a state or federal charter show that the dual charter system is at work. I'm very, very pleased that NCUA is has this initiative going on at the moment to modernize the field of membership.
Yes, most definitely.
I think that means they're listening, seeing what credit unions are doing, and that's great. That's what the dual charter system was created to do. We fully support what NCUA is trying to do, and have worked with them. We've offered our help. Most welcoming, so that they can learn from the state experience in broadening field of membership. By the same token, for interstate branching, you know, that is cited as a restriction for some states. Mm-hmm. And I'm pleased, back in 1998, there was something called the Southeastern Agreement, which eight states, and I need to make sure I don't leave any out, Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Mississippi, Missouri, North Carolina, Tennessee, and then Illinois have signed the Southeastern Agreement, which allows interstate branching among those states.
Oh, okay.
More recently, in 2015, another 10 states signed what started off as a Midwest agreement, kind of playing off of the Southeastern.
Mm-hmm.
This started as a Midwest agreement and then became a national agreement as other states said, hey, I'm in too. So the following 10 states in 2015 signed a national interstate branching agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And those states include Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, Kentucky, Wisconsin, West Virginia, Idaho, Oregon, Washington, and Illinois.
Wow.
And to me, you know, that's a great sign that state regulators are saying, you know what, we need to enable our credit unions to branch across state. In this modern day and age, if someone moves, they should be able to operate in another.
Exactly, especially with all the technology advancements with mobile this and that, remote deposit capture, all that type of stuff. I think these are just kind of a natural progression. And it sounds like you said, it's working, you know? People are talking and working things out and it's progressing, which is fantastic for the industry. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
So what's happening with the overhead transfer rate? What's the latest there?
Well, I think folks know that Chairman Matz, we're very pleased that she has announced that she will be proposing to the other two board members at NCUA in January that the overhead transfer rate be open to public notice and comment.
Mm-hmm.
We have fought long and hard for that. It's a historical issue for NASCUS, and you know, it really boils down to what expenses go into the overhead transfer rate, and are they reasonable? So we're very encouraged by the chairman's announcement. We will be looking for a few things in how this all unfolds. Certainly, we want to make sure that there's enough detail presented for folks to comment on, where we can really look at does it make sense for very, very specific expenses to be charged to the share insurance fund rather than be covered by NCUA on its own.
Right.
Want to be sure that beyond calling for comments, that any submitted comments are public also, that mm-hmm. they don't just get turned into NCUA, but that the responses from stakeholders are shared publicly. We want to be sure that, as with any rulemaking, that the comments are addressed by NCUA and not simply collected. Lastly, we are also going to be looking for ongoing public notice and comment whenever the OTR changes significantly. That really should go back out to stakeholders before changes to the OTR are proposed.
Of course.